Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All right, I got to talk to Michael about something. The Honda Classic is on now.
Yes.
So we assume DG is there.
I would guess
that's just down the corner.
Yeah, whoa. We assume he's walking.
Stop by the Publix
to
pick up a fresh challah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, because it's Shabbat Shalom today.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Obviously, DG wrote us and he wasn't even there. I'll get to that Honda Classic and my feelings about that in a second. My dog got in a fight today. Jessie got in an actual fight today. I take her out in the morning, and a guy down the street has a dog, a smaller dog, but, you know, a yappy, angry dog, and he just lets go of the leash. And so the dog runs to Chessie. So Chessie gets in a fight with the dog, and I'm just looking at this guy. I'm trying to separate these dogs and not get bitten. I'm trying to actually grab the other dog's leash so I can pull that dog away.
So you think it's a drop the leash, not the dog just escapes?
No, the dog dropped the leash. And then, you know, he finally comes over and gets his dog. And his dog got the worst of it. Not terrible. I mean, it lasted 20 seconds. His dog got the worst of it. And I just looked at him, what? And he goes, yeah, I was opening a door and I just let her go. I go, okay. You know, I mean, and it's a fight. And they're biting each other's faces. Like, that dogs go for the throats of other dogs.
Yeah, that's their move.
You know, and I have to check my dog to see if she's got blood on her or anything like that. She doesn't. He checks his dog. No blood. You know, but she got in a fight. I don't want that to happen. You can't stop it. When another dog is free and rushes at your dog, you can hold your dog, but you can't stop the fight. So it's very annoying.
Yeah, this is a larger issue right now, particularly coming off of years where animal rescues were through the roof and people taking in dogs that they otherwise wouldn't necessarily have taken in because of the work from home situation.
She probably was abused as a small dog.
Right, and that's what we know about Chessie. But when you think about what you don't know about dogs across the street, if you will, is you have a lot of dog owners who say, well, my dog's well-behaved, or my dog would never do this. And this happens when you have little kids, when you are just, say, hesitant around dogs, and people assume, no, my dog's okay.
I know my dog's not.
Don't ever go to a dog park, because that.
Well, I know. I could never go to a dog park with Chessie.
And one of the tough
things. Never.
I love animals. I love dogs.
She's great with people. She's terrible with dogs.
And when you see a strange dog, my first inclination is to go over and scratch its head or pet it. And you can't do that because you just don't know how that dog is wired.
I just imagine Chessie getting up on her hind legs and lifting up her paws.
Ready to punch like a kangaroo. Right. Ready to strike like a kangaroo.
Right. There's the collie in her.
Let's talk about the Honda Classic. And people are saying, I don't want to talk about the Honda Classic. Well, it's the last one.
Oh, it's it?
That's it. Honda was a sponsor for over 40 years of a PGA Tour event. They may be the longest running sponsor. And they've always had a tournament in Florida. It hasn't always been at the PGA National Course, but it's always been in South Florida.
Yeah, and if it's not Honda, it might be Sony as one of the longest running sponsors.
It's the only tournament in South Florida. This is the only one. You think of Florida and golf. This is the only tournament in South Florida. The Players is in Northern Florida. The Arnold Palmer is in Orlando. You know, they're not in South Florida.
Yeah, you've had tournaments in Palm Beach Gardens before, not currently. You've had Doral in the past.
Doral in the past, not anymore, not Doral. Doral was a big, you know, it was the Jackie Gleason Inverary Classic at one point when Jackie Gleason and Sammy Davis Jr. and Bing Crosby, when they sponsored, Glenn Campbell, sponsored their own golf tournaments. That's long ago and far away. But Honda's out. And I don't know why they're out, but they're probably out because they're not a designated tournament and they don't get any stature.
They've always been devalued just by their position on the calendar. And then with the announcement this year about elevated events, it was also in name.
So I got to watch golf. I mean, we have Wilbon on later. I'm sure he didn't watch any golf. We have Jeff Passan on later. I'm sure he didn't watch any golf. I got to not only watch the oddity on my cable system is that NBC, which did the Honda Classic, is number 804.
Yes.
And the CW, which did the Saudi Tour tournament out of Mexico, is 803. So I can go back and forth and back and forth. If you notice in the newspapers, the Saudi Tour is now in the newspapers. This is strictly a function of being on television in the United States of America and not on YouTube.
Same thing for the apps. If you go to ESPN and you pull down golf, professional golf, you can click into LPGA Tour, PGA Tour, Live, Korn Ferry.
Now Live. Now you can do it. Because getting on television, even though they bought their way onto television, they have no ads. They have no sponsorship. When it comes to sponsorship, what they do is they show a picture of you sitting in your house watching their tournament.
Very nice houses, by the way.
That's what they show.
Wow.
And not the clientele I expected.
Now, one thing about, I'll get to the Honda in a second. One thing that enormously bothered me, and this is just me.
But may I guess?
Go ahead.
The music.
No. Not as much as Shorts.
What was
Shorts?
Intimidated by the Cavs.
Shorts.
Makes sense.
I can't believe it. These are pro golfers. They're wearing shorts. They're not wearing pants. That's just new for me. I'm sure when they go out just to play with their friends, of course they wear shorts. Everybody wears shorts to play golf, but I never saw that before, and it's disconcerting to me.
And if you go to a tour event or you go to a major, you see them wearing shorts for the practice rounds.
Right.
And so, then, we were talking about the weekend. What's going to be the three-point shot? How quickly will they adopt something like the shorts?
Maybe.
Do you think at one point in tennis, people were like, I like it better when they wear long pants? Because they used
maybe.
To.
Maybe.
They used to wear long
maybe,
pants.
Maybe, but women didn't wear long pants.
But
Langdon didn't. They wore dresses.
Yes.
So, but in golf.
Yeah, it's an odd look.
Jackets and ties in golf.
Yeah.
So it's really an odd look for me. And I don't understand what's going on, and there's so much stuff on the left-hand side of the screen.
The NASCAR crawl.
I don't understand.
Now, if you understood the names, and I don't understand the names, and I don't know how they selected these names, and the logos are problematic, to say the least. But if you were to know the names, it would be interesting to see how they're going up and down.
With these teams, and I don't know where the tournament is. I don't know what hole you're on, and are you going to win?
And so that's the problem with the shotgun start. If you're looking at all these shots are being played at the same time as you're doing basically a carousel around 18 holes of golf, you don't necessarily know, is this shot live, or is this on a 30-second delay? Where are we right now?
So it was problematic for me, and I got off it. Well, also because Charles Howell III, I think, was 9 shots ahead.
Oh.
So I didn't, there was no drama, right? There was no drama to that.
Yeah, I didn't watch the end of the tournament. We watched 5 minutes to try and get a sense, and it looked, I guess the way that they passed.
Did Chan like it?
It looked like golf. And Charles Howell III is a journeyman tour player.
But you've heard of him for 20 years.
Yeah, he is a very solid player. Did not win nearly as much as you might have thought he'd win, but a solid player. We didn't watch any more than what we saw.
Phil was like plus 20 at some point. I mean, Phil's not in. It doesn't matter.
Cash and checks.
Yeah, Phil is not
cash and checks
relevant.
But for them, it was on TV. It's a course that you have seen before, so it has a very recognizable bunker. These are courses that have fallen down the ladder of professional golf.
Mexico.
It is a former tour course.
Yeah.
I think it's had some Korn Ferry stuff, but it looked like professional golf.
In the United States of America, they have all the Trump courses and everything else. They're outside of the United States of America, basically.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Nobody cares about that. If it's compelling, maybe it's compelling. I didn't understand it. It's going to take me a few more tries. I'll give it a few more tries. What I found compelling was the Honda, even though there's nobody in it. There's nobody you've ever heard of in it. Maybe Zach Johnson you've heard of.
I think they're all playing a practice round for the Seminole Pro
Member. For the Seminole Pro Member, which is today.
Today. And if you put that on TV.
The great Sam Reeves playing with Nick Watney today. So anyway, the Honda Classic at the PGA National, which is a very long, difficult course. Not fun, right?
A lot of potential to lose some golf balls.
Yeah, in the water everywhere. It's not fun. But it had a great, and I hate myself for what I'm going to say because I missed the ending. I'll explain it in a second. It had a great two-man head-to-head match play situation. The two guys playing together are the two leaders, Chris Kirk, a journeyman pro who has won 3 or 4 times on tour, but not in 15 years.
Has been very open about his
alcoholism.
Personal struggles.
They talked about it, his alcoholism. He's out there playing against a kid named Eric Cole. You don't know Eric Cole because he doesn't play. He didn't even succeed on the Korn Ferry Tour.
What do you think about his pants?
Those are those pants that bunch up at the bottom. There's an elastic thing at the bottom of the pants.
I think you're struggling to say joggers.
I don't know. Is that what they're called, joggers? He's pretty young. Younger than Chris Kirk, I think. And what is tremendously interesting about Eric Cole is not only that yesterday he made like 300 feet of putts. His father, Bobby Cole, was a tour pro. His mother, Laura Baugh, was one of the great golfers of all time.
Really?
She was, yeah, it was Laura Baugh. And she's at the tournament. And she's wearing a hat that says Laura Baugh. You know, because now she's in her, probably her 60s, Laura Baugh. She came along in the 70s. I mean, she was a great player. And he had a chance to win. And he gave up the lead. And on 16, Chris Kirk threw in a birdie putt to take a one-shot lead. And you say it's over. Was it 16 or 17 that he did that?
That was on 17,
I believe. Par three. He did it. Then they go to 18. He puts his second shot in the water.
Oof.
There's going to be a two-shot swing. The kid's going to win. Puts it in the water. And the kid after two, Cole after two, is off the green by 10 feet. Did you watch?
So I watched until we got to this hole because we thought it was done. And the children decided that it was time to watch All Engines Go. So I guess I was the number one engine there.
Okay. So he gets to about 10 feet off the green. He's got a downhill chip. He's been great all day. He bombs it 15 feet past off the green. He pars the hole. He should have birdied the hole in one. Chris Kirk bogeys the hole. Makes, you know, that's fine considering he went in the water. And now they're tied and they go to extra holes. And I took the dog out. And I don't know what happened. So I get home and I say to Carol, who won? And she gives me that look like, oh.
I was supposed to be taking notes.
And she says, I think Kirk won. I said, when? She said they had more holes.
I think he almost jarred a wedge shot.
Okay, so more holes. And I go, which one was Kirk? The one with the beard? She goes, blue shirt. And I said, they both had blue shirts on. Yeah, beard. So she
was correct.
Okay, so she got it right. So where did they go? What hole did they go to?
I took the dog out. I think they probably went back to 18. I'm not sure.
Either way, each ending is great because of their personal stories. Not only that, but the kid Cole has Addison's disease, which is terribly debilitating physically. I don't know how old he is. Someone said he was 34. That just seemed old, but maybe not, because he looked very, very young. But there were two wonderful potential endings, one way or another. But I thought, God, I thought I was sure that when Kirk hit the birdie putt, he would won the tournament. And then sure, when he went in the water, he had lost the tournament. It was all on him.
Right.
It wasn't on Cole. It was on him. So you missed the ending too?
I missed the ending. I guess so people would say that's the power of a tournament that is structured that allows the leaders to go off in the final pair.
Yeah.
And you can have drama building up over that back nine over the course of hours.
People nobody's heard of and nobody cares about.
But the fact that we then leave to go, you know, make dinner. we had some nice Momofuku noodles, which were very good with some leftover pork chopped.
Oh, good.
But the fact that you go out to take the dog is sort of the issue with the dynamics of how we watch golf.
The other note that I'd written a note down to myself to make sure to say today that a lot, because there was a lot of basketball yesterday, and I'm sure Wilbon will talk about all the NBA.
Nice Penn win.
Penn beat who?
Dartmouth.
Okay, and they're in the Final Four.
They're going to be in the four, yeah.
Who coaches them now?
Donahue.
Okay. Oh, that's great. Oh, he came over from Cornell?
He came back.
And it was, okay, good. Because I root for them, obviously. Sunk a lot of money in there. You know, to get a belt and a bag. It was really good. The Wizards will never win. They will never win. They will never get, even when they win the lottery, look who they've picked.
Kwame Brown.
Kwame Brown and John Wall. Useless. Useless
players. Do you remember Kwame Brown's suits?
Yeah, well, Sally Jenkins wrote about that. He threw them out. He bought a bunch of suits, wore them once, and then threw them out.
Was he Jay Gatsby?
Well, essentially.
The shirts.
Yeah, essentially. But they'll never win. Their best player is useless, Bradley Beal. He's often injured, and he's a jump shooter. He doesn't do anything.
Well, the good news is you don't pay a lot for him, right?
They pay an unbelievable amount of money, and he has a full no trade. And then they draft guys, you know, who they draft him from 6 to 10, and, you know, then they get rid of him. Then they get rid of him. The general manager doesn't have any idea what he's doing. Tommy Shepard? He has no idea what he's doing. People come in and people go out. He's never happy. He's churning the roster all the time.
Well, who's the kid that they sent to the Lakers? Hachimura?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he was their first round pick.
So they got lots of great stuff back.
They got nothing. They had second round picks and a non-player.
Who gets second round
picks? They get nothing.
They're useless.
He's no...
Yeah.
I don't know what he's doing. They're never going to win. Let's get out of here.
Oh, before we go, because I'm upset that this is the final Honda Classic. That just bothers me. Now, at the end of this, I know you weren't watching, but at any point did someone say, I'm going to wake you up early because I'm going to take a ride with you?
We're going down to the Honda shop. I'll tell you what we're going to do. Put on a ragged sweatshirt. I'll take you any place you want me to. First gear. It's all right. Second gear, lean right. Third gear, hold on tight. It's a little Honda by the Beach Boys. You didn't think I would know that,
No,
did you?
I knew you would. I knew you would.
Yeah. They make a lot of things, Honda, and they're out. I don't know that there's a tournament.
Do you remember your hatchback that got stolen from in front of your house?
Yes. Yes.
Ooh,
Honda.
I don't think I've ever heard that.
I found it in the park.
I don't know if there's going to be a South Florida tournament next year. Maybe, but I don't know. All right. Michael Wilbon, when we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Devin Heritage sends this in. This is a song from Intercontinental, but it's not Intercontinental. It's Intercontin Sevenal. The only band to record original music, which was recorded on all seven continents, is back with Volume 3. Tony's favorite band to pronounce, Intercontin Sevenal. Has released their third album, which features original music recorded from each continent. The album features an original song co-written and performed by artists in Russia and Ukraine. All proceeds go towards Ukrainian Refugee Fund. Put your money where your mouth is. Good for you. The record can be found on all streaming platforms, iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, etc. It's pronounced Intercontinental. It's proud to continue to make music that is motivated to improve the world. This is a song called Sienna, and it... plays in Michael Wilbon. Michael Kornheiser, if people want to send in original music like Intercontinental, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
So today when I went outside and walked the dog and got back, waiting on my phone was a message from Alan Bubis, the socialite, who wrote Words of Wisdom and sent me something you did with Axios. I don't really know what Axios is. But in which you said your breakfast was Rice Krispies with the old-fashioned habit of reading, not a screen, but the actual goddamn newspaper. And no green juice. No green juice. I've never had
green
juice in
That's
my life.
Great.
And mornings don't count. They're just in the way. And the socialite sent this to me and said these are words to live by. What is Axios?
I don't really know. They asked me to interview and talk about several Washingtonians, I guess, talk about their mornings and the habit of their mornings and what they were like. And I said, sure.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
That? Pretty simple.
It's a picture of you in an alarm clock. I mean, it's a creative, it is actually a creative thing to do.
Oh, good. I want to see it. I'd done it already. I didn't know. Some weeks ago. Probably 2 months ago.
So anyway. All right. So let me get to, I think, the largest question of the NBA, which what I saw yesterday, because I don't stay up late for these games. So I missed the late game. But the question is, why should I ever believe in Dallas? Ever. They're up 27 points against a 12th-place team at home. You tell me why I should ever believe in them now.
You shouldn't.
Yeah.
Right. You shouldn't. I mean, you know, no, there's no chance that you believe in Dallas. And yesterday, Tony, was one of the extraordinary basketball days of my life. And there were so many good games, college men's, college women, NBA. And the NBA games were just amazing because you got so many teams that think they can win, that they are playing now in this last 20-game sprint, and they're coming like Usain Bolt. And it started the whole weekend. It started with Sacramento and the Clippers in a 176-175 game. I guess that was Friday night. And then it just continued yesterday. There were four games on ABC ESPN that were part of my work yesterday. It was just stunning. And one of those games, of course, was Lakers-Dallas, in which, you know, you make fun of LeBron because LeBron has said, and what LeBron said, to be accurate, is these are 23 of the most important games of my life.
Regular season.
Yeah. And I said, yeah, I said that before he did, because I called Matt Kelleher last Sunday night, and I said, when they come back, LeBron cares about, yes, his legacy. Cares about it already. Maybe cares too much. He knows that Magic won an additional championship he hasn't won yet. He knows Kobe's got one. He knows Jordan and Kareem have two. And so you don't get there by missing the playoffs a second straight year. And so this is why this is important to LeBron. And they were down 27, and you just go, oh, my God, they're going to get crushed.
Yes.
And they need to go. Most people, and I'm included, have said they got to go 17-6.
You told me they had to go 16-7, okay, so now they have to go 14-7.
Right, but so a lot of people said 17-6.
Okay.
I said 16-7. You know, people said, okay, you got to win 16 or 17 games. And now they've won two.
That's right.
They're 2-0 since that. And when they came, they just marched down. They walked down Dallas. And let me tell you something. If you want to rip Dallas, and it's fine. The culprit is Luka Doncic, who's a big baby. Okay? He's great. He is absolutely great. He's got 60 points in this year. When the game is over, the greats come over. They hug Luka. They're talking to him. They're smiling with him. You watched him do stuff in any game, even if they lose, that you can't remember many people doing. But he's a baby. Because when the action goes the other way, he's already a non-defender. But half the plays, he's got his hands up, and he's whining and complaining, and the other team's going the other way at 200 miles an hour. And you know this year, everybody can score 150 points.
They can.
And so Luka Doncic, as great as he is, he's the problem.
So this is an example that I'm going to give. When they got Kyrie Irving, Jason Kidd said, in effect, I'll tell you what he actually said, we need to score 140 to win. Because he's basically saying we don't really have any defense. And with Luka and Kyrie, we're not going to get any defense at all.
That's right.
So we have to score 140 to win. They went out like 27-2 in this game. They made like 9 threes. I'm watching this game. And the fact that they lost this game is stunning to me at home. You know how I feel about Embiid, that every time Embiid gets in a struggle with Antetokounmpo, he loses. Every time he gets into a struggle with Boston at home, he loses. I have no you love him more than I. I have no faith in his ability to win the game. And now I look at Dallas the same. Why would I ever believe in this?
Well, you can't, because Jason Kidd knew what he was saying. He knew exactly what he was saying. And yesterday he ripped him. He did. He should have. He said, we gotta find some maturity. You know, when your best player is as immature as Luka Doncic, you're not doing anything. This ain't about Kyrie Irving. And Jason Kidd's right. It's not about Jason Kidd not calling timeouts. His best player and one of the five or six best players in the league is a total baby. And nobody's going to rip him today. They're going to do other stuff. They're going to talk about other stuff.
But you'll rip him.
I'm going to rip him. I just did. I'm going to rip him all day.
You'll rip him all day. I love
watching him. And I know you do, too.
He's a great player.
But you can't have that. Embiid doesn't do that.
No, Embiid.
Embiid leaves the floor with burns.
Embiid's just yappy. That's
okay, that has nothing to do with whether he plays or not.
No, but you're right.
You can dislike him. It doesn't matter.
He plays.
He's a great player.
Yes.
He's runner up twice.
But he does not. He does not win these games.
He doesn't. But he doesn't look at the other end of the court.
No.
With his palms up.
No.
One is a shortcoming. The other is an indictment.
Okay. That's fair. A couple of other things. We had when we talked yesterday, you love Sacramento now.
Yes.
A team that has not made the playoffs, I don't know, 80 years.
It's Chris Webber.
Yeah.
And Vlade Divac.
Yes. It is. It's like 20 years. Yeah.
They're so much fun to watch. The guards, the kids, Malik Monk. And most importantly, I'm drawing a blank on the other
kid. De'Aaron Fox.
De'Aaron Fox is an awesome. De'Aaron Fox last night had like his seventh straight 30-point game.
Yeah.
De'Aaron Fox is stud. And they're fun to listen to at the end of the game. They're coached by somebody who I do consider myself friends with, Mike Brown.
Like Mike Brown.
And
they made a great trade when they got Sabonis, who was underrated by Miles.
They did, and they gave away a terrific player.
Yes, they did.
A terrific player in Halliburton.
Yes.
And so they got an all-star. And so they got two all-stars on that team. And the other night, Tony, in that game, Malik Monk and De'Aaron Fox each had 40. And I'm not talking about some all-star game kind of 40. People are going at it. And the Clippers, look, you probably don't like the Clippers.
I do not.
You're not going to.
I do not like
them.
But I like Westbrook, so I'm going to.
Right. Well, yeah. Hey, how do you? 17 points and 14 assists.
Yeah, I like Westbrook.
And he fouled out. But yeah, so the weekend was full of, there wasn't, I mean, of the feature games, there wasn't one mediocre game.
Well, the first note you sent me was about women's college basketball and Caitlin Clark. Tell the people
Caitlin
about that.
Caitlin Clark, they're down. I was down. I was playing Indiana 4-2 or 2-6 or something. 2-6, I guess, in Indiana. Must have been 2. And they're playing in Iowa. And it's sold out. There's 17,000 people in the stands in Iowa. And they're down. They get down because Indiana hits a shot with 1.5 seconds left. And I started to turn. And okay, I got all this stuff now. Yeah, I got 3 TVs. I don't have any capacity. I have no bandwidth for some game with 1.5 left and the team's going to lose. But I'm like, you know what? Everybody slurps this kid, Caitlin Clark. Everybody says that she's Larry Bird. Okay, well, let's see what she's got. They call timeout. Once again, 1.5. And they run an inbounds play with 2 screens. She pops just free enough to catch the ball 22 feet from the basket. Boom. And it's a scream out loud. Because, again, you've got a reputation. She's got a rep. She's a hired gun. She's in that group of women that, you know, you think of in the WNBA and Olympic Games. And I just go, oh, my God, this girl could be something. And to watch that live yesterday, and they won that game at home, and people went nuts. And that started the day. That game was early. And that started the day. Michigan-Wisconsin, great game.
Yes, that really was a great game. And the big kid is from DeMatha, right? The local kid, Taylor, whatever his name is, from Michigan.
I didn't know he was from DeMatha.
I think he's from here.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he's from here. I think it's DeMatha. I could be wrong.
So there's just a slew. All I did yesterday after doing countdown at 9:30 in the morning out here, I just got in front of the TV.
Did you watch Northwestern? Northwestern blew an 18-point lead, right?
That was 2 games ago. They didn't have an 18-point lead at Maryland yesterday. They were in a tight game, and it wasn't a tight game.
Oh, that's right. It was buried in the second half.
Yeah, this is why I didn't want to be ranked. I know what happens when we get ranked. Bad thing.
When was the last time you were ever ranked? Were you ever ranked?
2018, maybe, something like that.
Wow. Yeah, you're 0-2 since ranking.
We're tied for second place still in the Big Ten.
Oh, you're going to go there. I told you, Lenardi.
Yeah, I know, but I I'm looking at how we're playing. I don't care about that because we've been in the tournament exactly once.
That's right. Just get in again.
Yesterday, yes, I squeezed that in, but that wasn't one of the games that left you breathless.
Right.
The other games, and particularly the Caitlin Clark, Michigan men, and the NBA games, the four NBA games were wow. And Tony, I could sense this coming out of the break because, you know, everybody talked all year, we talked all year, and I kind of dismissed it, about people tanking for Wembanyama. People want Wembanyama, but that, I didn't sense that people would tank. LeBron James is not going to tank for him. Wembanyama can't help LeBron James. He can't. The Lakers have to win. That's how they're built. Oh, by the way, we didn't mention Dame Lillard going for 71.
Oh, did he? I didn't even know that.
Dame Lillard going for 71. You have to watch the package. I don't mean just the whatever.
It's too late for me. These things are on too late.
I'm not talking about watching a game. I need one to watch the game. I'm just saying Dame Lillard hit shot. Dame Lillard in one game, he had shots, Tony, and they got to win. He comes out, and Dame Lillard's great. Look, you. Dame Lillard's another guy to me. You don't like
him. I don't like him.
Given what he stands for.
Yeah, I don't like what he stands for.
Dame Lillard says, no, I'm not going to be part of a super team. I'm not going to beg LeBron to play with me like he did other people. I'm going to stay in this small upper Northwest community. Even as a young black man from Oakland, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to raise children with my wife. I'm going to love it here and love these people and play here. And no, I'm not going to Madison Square Garden. How you don't like this guy?
I do like that part. I do like that part. There's parts I don't like.
This is who he is.
Okay.
And he goes out there, and he stared down Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant in the playoffs 2 years ago and eliminated them.
Yeah, he's a great clutch player. Unlike your boy Paul George, Damian Lillard is a great clutch player.
And last night he put 71.
That's a lot.
And before the game he says, look, I want to make the playoffs. And the only way we're going to do that is I'm the best player on this team. I'm the veteran player. I have to go out and get us in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Then the dude hangs 71. Come on now.
That's a lot.
That's this. Look, you can say there's no defense and you can make that case.
But you still have to make the shots.
Level.
Yeah, you got to make the shots.
Come on. The guy's making 38-foot shots on a pull-up.
Yeah, that's something. All right.
This to me was a, this is a, again, I don't know that I've ever seen a collection of games in one regular, we'll get to the playoffs in another 6 weeks, but man, this is crazy.
Good. All right, we'll talk later. Don't have any green juice in the interim.
No green juices for me.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls. We'll take a break. Jeff Passan will join us. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Bottom of the ninth with a full count, my mind began to drift. That shortstop down near second base, does that constitute a shift? I was thinking about that and thinking about MeUndies. Did I use the code? Will they be free? And just about then, the umpire raised his hand and called strike three. You gotta be alert, you gotta be alert, you gotta be alert to the pitcher. Keep your feet in the box in the dirt, you gotta be alert to the pitcher. When you face Verlander, don't think about your grocery list. When you're in against Kershaw, don't daydream about the first girl you kiss. Don't think about Kyrie Irving for the Beatles-Stones debate. Don't try to figure out why you don't like food touching on your plate. Don't ruminate whether that thing up there might be a spy balloon. Don't wink at the girl in the box seats. There'll be time enough for that real soon. You gotta be alert, you gotta be alert, you gotta be alert to the pitcher. Keep your feet in the box in the dirt, you gotta be alert to the pitcher.
It's totally brilliant. He's totally brilliant, Dan Byrne. He's just, there's no other, it's a strange brilliance, but it's total brilliance. He plays in Jeff Passan. You like that song? That was a great song, wasn't it?
The best that I've heard coming in on this show, and I've heard some good ones.
That's really, really good. Oh, by the way, before we start, from Mark Feinsand, I'm episode 210 of the Loyal Littles podcast, Eat It Passan, just so you know that he sent that directly to you. I wanted you to know that. So we wanted to get Jeff Passan on for one very specific purpose, which is just to talk about the new rules and what's going on. And, of course, the poster boy for the anti-new rules is Manny Machado. And then, of course, Manny Machado is now negotiating a, you know, $87 trillion contracts. So let's start with this. The Padres are actually spending money like Saudi Arabia. Why would the Padres give Machado? Machado's 30. It's an 11-year deal. Why would they do this?
Well, first, Tony, let me say Feinsand ate it yesterday when I got the Machado scoop over him. So that's
good.
One.
Yeah.
Second, though, it's fascinating to watch what the Padres are doing, right?
Yeah.
Because this is a team that, for the longest time, didn't just have but earned the reputation as a small market team. They have a tiny media market compared to the vast majority of teams in Major League Baseball. They play in a metropolitan area, if you want to just include Southern California, that has two financial behemoths, and yet the Padres are going into the 2023 season with a higher payroll than both the Dodgers
yes.
and the Angels. They've got $300 plus million players in Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr. They've got Xander Bogaerts, who they signed for $280 million. They gave $100 million-plus to both Yu Darvish, who's going to be paid through like his age 42 season, and Joe Musgrove. I mean, they're just spending, spending, spending. And that's all without paying Juan Soto long-term either, which they
that's
hope
right.
to do, and pursuing Shohei Ohtani, which they plan to do. How does it all make sense? Well, I think it's, frankly, a new way for teams to actually approach this whole business. And what the Padres have done is they have sought and embraced outside investment that they are leveraging their franchise value against. And this is a novel concept, right? We look at about a week or so ago what John Middleton, the Philadelphia Phillies owner, said. And he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, when I die, nobody's going to laud me for having run a business where we make cash year over year. They're going to look at me and ask how many championships did he win and base my ownership of this franchise on that. And it's like, oh, well, that's nice to have an owner who thinks that way, not about, you know, profit year over year being the be-all end-all of how a franchise is run. No, it's about championships. And Peter Seidler, the owner of the Padres, who bought them for $800 million and sees them now worth well over $2 billion, is taking that appreciation in value and selling a little piece of his company to turn around and reinvest it in the product. And the product is the players. And he's doing so, A, in pursuit of a championship, but B, with the same idea that the Golden State Warriors did. The Golden State Warriors, Tony, are not the team that should have the highest franchise value in the NBA. It should be the New York Knicks. It should be the Los Angeles Lakers. It should be the Chicago Bulls. No, it's the Warriors, and it's clearly the Warriors. And they go into the luxury tax and spend hundreds of millions of dollars every year to ensure that they have the best players in there. Why? Because their brand is now winning. That's what the San Diego Padres want to be. They want to be the exciting baseball team that has fans all across the country because of the players that they have on their team that, oh, by the way, also goes out and wins. And so I think it shouldn't be novel, but it is, and yet it also makes sense. The better the product you put on the field, the more fans you should have. The more fans you have, the greater appreciation you can have in franchise value, at which point selling a chunk of your company, in this case to a company called Ares Capital Management, which invests, you know, in sports really across the landscape, not just baseball, makes complete financial sense.
I've never thought of any of this before. It is the anti-learner position, clearly.
Yes.
Yes, it makes sense to me because it's not my money, so it makes sense to me. In the specifics of Manny Machado at 30 years old getting an 11-year deal, a guy who is not only a dirty player, but I always thought was hated by teammates, certainly the Los Angeles Dodgers experience. I guess I just wondered about that. I thought that baseball was trying to get away from these contracts where in the last 5 years, you get nothing back from the player.
Yeah, and then 2022-23 offseason happened. And yeah, we, you know, contracts like this became de rigueur. Like, yeah, this is just a regular thing that we're seeing now. And it reminds me a little bit. Remember when the NHL had those contracts that were stretching well beyond a decade for luxury tax implications? The same thing's happening in baseball right now. And okay, there is, of course, the possibility, and something that I think a fair number of people might point to as saying the reality, that the Padres are not going to be able to sustain this long term. And Peter Seidler, their owner, was essentially asked that question after Rob Manfred was one of the people who talked about sustainability. And Peter Seidler flipped it on its head and said there's risk in not trying to win, right? And he's absolutely right. And this, Tony, this just gets back to an axiom that I think applies across sports, in capped and uncapped sports alike, which is that a franchise quite often is only as good as its owner. And you just hope as a fan that you live in a city and root for a team that has an owner who gives enough of a damn to try, actively try, to win every year. And if that means putting yourself in a potentially financially perilous position long term, you say, well, you know what? In service of winning now, that is something I'm trying to do, and we'll figure it out then because, hey, professional sports, pretty lucrative business, and in the end, if we have to unload these contracts, which a decade down the road may not look nearly as bad as they are compared to the financial landscape then, we'll be able to do so, number one, because their names, and number two, because if we have a really good farm system in place and we're willing to attach prospects to get rid of money, there will always be a market for that.
It's very interesting to me. Got me off my topic, which was the rules. I assume the rule with the easiest flashpoint is the pitch clock. I'm going to assume that because here's Manny Machado, first at bat, taking a strike right away to show his contempt for these things. And I don't think he's a lone wolf, Jeff. I think there's 100 guys in the league who have been stars or close to being stars for 6 to 10 years and they say, I want to play the baseball that I've always played. I don't want to play this new stinking baseball. So what I'm asking is, do you agree with that premise? And if so, how long will it take for these rules to not be jarring and see people thrown out all the time?
Tony, they're honestly not really the people who concern me in this situation, because as we've seen with the Buster Posey rule with collisions at home plate, as we've seen with the sticky stuff, as we've seen with sliding hard into second base, if a rule is in place, players will sort of roll their eyes and bitch and moan behind the scenes, and then they'll adapt and adjust, because we are, you know, creatures of habit. And if new habits are foisted upon us, then we get used to them. More than anything, I think athletes are really malleable. And so they will adjust to this. The interesting thing to me is rather fans in that age group, and especially fans who have been watching baseball for 6 to 10 years. You know, we're talking teenagers, and we're talking people in their 20s, and people who haven't seen full games from the 1970s and 1980s. That segment of fans grew up on what I think eventually is going to be referred to, and this probably isn't going to catch on, but to me, this is what it is, as boring baseball. And that's baseball with people dicking around between pitches, with pitchers doing, you know, half moons on the mound and getting the rosin bag and clearing their spikes. What we see with pitch clock baseball is reminiscent of what baseball used to be. There is a guy on the mound, and he's there to pitch. There's a guy in the batter's box, and he's there to swing. And, you know, we're going to have, I think, more swings early in at bats eventually, because hitters are going to know that, hey, I don't have to wait around for action. I don't have to wait for my perfect pitch. This game is going to be moving, and either I move with it or it's going to leave me behind. And we've seen this early in spring training. I understand that there have been 2 full days of Major League Baseball spring training games and a first day where there were 2 games. During those 35 games, Tony, there have been 69 pitch clock violations, 1.97 per game. And
it's nothing.
Compared to the minor leagues, the first 2 weeks in the minor leagues last year when they were testing this out, it was 1.73 violations. And yet, let me ask you this. If the average game time in all of spring training, Tony, last year was 3 hours and 1 minute, what do you think the average game time in these 2 and change days, and I know small sample size alert, but what do you think the average game time in these first few days of spring training has been this year?
So I'll knock off 15 minutes and I'll say 2:46.
It would be 2:38.
Well, that's great.
23
that's great.
Fewer minutes, and it
and
it
managers tracks. Aren't running out there to protect their players and getting tossed.
No, in fact, managers are the one. You know, Buck Showalter said it. I'm not sure if it's to Joel Sherman or just it was to reporters in Port St. Lucie. Buck Showalter said, "I hope the umpires are hard asses about this, because we need to learn and we need to figure it out." And we saw it on the first full day that umpires are going to call this by the book when an umpire called Cal Conley on a 3-2 pitch in the bottom of the ninth inning with the bases loaded for an automatic strike that essentially ended the game. I think it was to a number of very skeptical people about the pitch clock, like the jarring moment where they could say, "See what this is doing to baseball? It's ruining the game. Rob Manfred is the worst commissioner," you know, going on and on. And to me, it's like Major League Baseball has bled 10 million fans over the course of the last, like, 20 years. I mean, people aren't coming to games like they used to. People aren't watching games like they used to. And the biggest complaint among fans, particularly ones who know what baseball can look like, is that the games are too slow and plodding. This addresses that issue without any demonstrable effect on the game itself, right? When you take it in concert with the new rules, like the ban on the shift and like the lack of disengagements, which means you only have two pickoff moves or step off per at bat, and the larger bases, which narrow the distance between first and second and third and make stealing a little bit easier. All of those things have a demonstrable effect on the game itself, on the field. But all Major League Baseball is doing with the pitch clock is, you know, separating the wheat from the chaff. Like, this is the good stuff, guys. You still get all the baseball that you've gotten in the past. It's just a sped-up version. It's just baseball on the podcast setting of 1.25. You're just watching a little faster. Like, sometimes people listen to the show a little faster.
This is great. Jeff, this is great. Thank you so much for this. It's really good. I'll tell Feinstein to eat it at that point. Thank you, Jeff.
I appreciate that. That's the listen, for all the fun talk we had this morning, Tony, that's the most important thing to me. So that's I always appreciate you coming through.
Jeff Passan, boys and girls. That was really good. I hadn't thought of a lot of those things, really hadn't. We'll take a break. Come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Sounds like the Bruins,
doesn't it?
Really does.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your emails, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some.
Ronnie Neumeier and Tom Lofgren. Just love that. Love that. Want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad for us, please?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. We've got the bagel sandwiches today. It's always exciting. All you need to do is go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you will be thrilled.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, when I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, it's a wonder I can think at all. And though my lack of education hasn't hurt me much, I can read the writing on the wall. That's Kodachrome. That is the brilliant, the genius yes. from Forest Hills, Paul Simon. Thanks to our guest today, Michael Wilbon, who needs to fix his phone, and Jeff Passan. Passan was wonderful.
Yes.
Thanks to our sponsors, MeUndies and Fidelity. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. Get the show through Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a review. From Gabe Gilson in New York City. My fiance was just resetting her camera that hasn't been used in years. What time is it? I looked down. 5:11. Not very good. Thanks for all the years of layoffs while explaining the simple things in life, like what a pool noodle is. Huh? From Matt in Atlanta, quote, my good leg went bad. Sounds like the title of yet another brilliant Dan Burns song. Odds are he's got something brewing already. I'll hang up and listen.
Oh, yeah, there you go, Dan.
From Kurt Johnson in Warland, Wyoming. It's not too late for the topic. I had a food prep mistake that did not lead to anything disgusting or sickening, but only something embarrassing. In 2011, I was living long-term in Berlin and had to move apartments rather quickly. Unfortunately for me, I was moving over an hour away with everything I owned along with a ton of research materials, which is going to take a few trips, and I had the flu. When it started to get dark, I realized I needed to get going to get out of there and finally finished just in time to buy a big thing of potato soup late that night in the new place. I had a migraine, so I didn't turn on the lights. Just threw my things down, opened a cupboard, found a ceramic pot, put it on the stove. I stirred it in between laying on the floor, starving and sweating. I realized after about 10 minutes, the spoon was still coming up with cold soup. So I touched the bottom of the pot and it was cold. The stove was on, so I toughed it out and turned on the lights. It took a moment, but I realized that the pot was really thick and didn't have handles. That's when I realized I was cooking soup in a flour pot.
Oh, but it didn't have a drainage
hole. From Dave in Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. I occasionally pick up my 5-year-old granddaughter from school here in Whitefish Bay. Recently, I was waiting for her when a young parent approached me. We exchanged hellos, and I felt compelled to inform him I was just listening to the Tony Kornheiser podcast, thinking he would scoff at me and move on. No, 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 he said, me too. Despite the frigid temperatures and piles of snow, it's like the connective tissue of Littles melted away the 30-plus years of age between us. It's not like we're best buds now, but a hearty lachiserie between us makes it sure feel that way. By the way, my wife came home recently after picking up our granddaughter and said, I ran into Charlie's dad, and all he mentioned was something about that Kornheiser dude. Priceless.
This never happens to me at pickup.
From Brandon Costello, the dichotomy of a man whose words have earned him a life of privilege, fame, and wealth, but who also has never seen a pool noodle, is exactly why I love this show. From Carl Letterman, this is long, and we're going through it. From Alexandria, Virginia. Your mention of George Blaney on the show unleashed a flood of memories about the old Madison Square Garden and the putrid Knicks of the early 60s. I attended Camp Wayne. I know Camp Wayne. Blue and white. Camp Wayne. For many years. And the Knicks would visit, yes, every summer. They always sent one star and a bunch of rookies, yes. In 1961, a contingent of Johnny Green, George Blaney, Donnie Butcher, and Cleveland Buckner visited the camp. And they visited our camp the next day. I remember Jumpin' Johnny lifted me up so I could dunk. My dad owned an optometry practice a half block south of the old garden on 8th Avenue, 50th and 8th. It was in the heart of the theater district. His patients included Ray Felix of the Knicks, 6'11", Gump Worsley of the Rangers, Zero Mostel, Arturo Toscanini, Albert Einstein, and Joe E. Ross of Sergeant Bilko and Car 54, Where Are You? Roy Rogers got his eyes checked when the rodeo was in town. I used to buy 25-cent balcony tickets. We all did, G.O. tickets, at MSG with my school G.O. card. Went to a lot of games with school friends and no adults. Parents would be charged with child neglect today. Yes, of course. Cleveland Buckner used to ride the E train with us when we returned home to Queens after games. Emmett Bryant's wife taught at my junior high school in Springfield Gardens. Within 12 years, the only truly great era of Knicks basketball came and went. 50th anniversary of the 1973 champions to be celebrated this weekend. I grew up in Laurelton, and your recent mention, that's just over the Queens line from Nassau, and your recent mention of the Lindbergh Howard Johnson stirred additional memories. The restaurant was on my way to Grandma's house at the intersection of Scranton Avenue and Sunrise Highway. We used to stop there on the way home, and I always got peppermint stick ice cream. Hojo's burned down in the 70s. You remember Wetson's a few blocks to the west on Sunrise and Ashton? Do I remember it? Eileen Wettinson, her father, invented Wetson's. She went to Hewlett High School with me. Eileen Wettinson. Do I remember it? It was a hamburger joint that predated McDonald's in New York, started by two guys from Valley Stream. 15-cent burgers, 10-cent fries, 25-cent shakes. When we got our driver's license, Wetson's and Nathan's in Oceanside were the main destinations. Nathan's used to be so great, still exists, but it's a shadow of its former self. As are we, Carl, as are we. No more deli, and now they serve Pizza Hut pizza. Sacrilege. Only the hot dogs and fries are as it. This is the greatest, greatest email we've ever had. From Patrick Sitter. Though my last name is Sitter, I too am a stander. I never learned to swim. Because of that, growing up, I missed out on a lot of fun and likely a lot of babes. Anyway, I was happy to learn we're kind of related, sort of. P.S. I was wondering, since you've read many of my emails on the pod, would it be okay if I listed contributor Tony Kornheiser show on my resume, or would that be too Santos-ish? Funny. Greg Spinelli, McLean, Virginia. The reason to eat vegetables first is because they taste best when they are hot. Everything else can cool a bit when you're eating them with no taste penalty, but the veggies have to be eaten hot. Also, someone to whom I'm related, who will remain nameless for reasons soon to be clear, could not let their food touch. 3 years in the federal penitentiary cured them of that eccentricity.
Yeah, that would do it.
Unexpected, wasn't that? Mike O'Brien of Boston, formerly Revere. You talk about food touching brings back great memories about my childhood. Then and now, I can't have my food touching. So needless to say, when I was about 7 and my dad made shepherd's pie, which is mashed potatoes, hamburger meat, and corn all smushed tough. Together, I just looked at it and demanded mac and cheese and to never put this concoction in front of me again. I'm now 42 and my lady friend has made similar meals, which I calmly just look at her and say, come on, what are we even doing here? She calls me a child and I agree and just order a cheese pizza and enjoy my meal. From Sean in Milwaukee. My ex-wife used to be nuts about not mixing her food. One of the many reasons she is now my ex-wife. From Terry Tahara in Bremen, Indiana. I'm in your demographic, parentheses 68 to death, and I'm also a non-swimmer due to a medical issue when I was young and told not to get water in my ear. I'm also a stander in the shallow end, but in the deep end, I'm a sinker. So am I. Yeah. And that's why, kids, I don't go in the deep end. Chris in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Can we get Daughter of the Friend show Olympian Brooke 40 to help with the swim lessons at Columbia? I'm a little back to the late 90s on tape delay in Albany, and I can say that you're asking Michael if he knew what a noodle was had me laughing out loud, perhaps more than any other time I can recall while listening to the show or podcast. Was it that stupid? I guess I'd never seen, I didn't know what it was.
It's like an icon of the summer.
Yeah.
Well, I don't go in the summer. I'm perpetual winter. I ought to move to, you know, Greenland. Tom McCormick, Bethesda, Maryland. Wednesday's show began with a 10-minute story which centered around your aquatic shortcomings. Although I thoroughly enjoyed the mental image of you keeping afloat with a pool noodle in an effort to seek comfort and strength for your ailing back, I was reminded of a 3-word phrase you uttered weeks ago, not a pickerel. Some reputations you'll never have. I couldn't get in the pickerel area because I couldn't swim. I was a frog. Yeah. I was a crane and then a frog, but not a pickerel. Mm-hmm. From Neil Dorsey. From Greenville, North Carolina, by way of Columbia, Maryland, and Malvern, New York, the school of Jody Forstad and Charlie Steiner. While listening to the podcast last week, I was overwhelmed with the discussion of NASCAR by Liz. She knows her stuff, and it brought back memories of my growing up in Malvern, a stone's throw across the Long Island Railroad Westwood Station to Lynbrook. I do love your show as it talks about the Long Island I knew, and then you talk about the D.C. area where we lived. Back to stock car racing on Long Island. There was a short track in Freeport. Of course there was. I went there all the time. That had races on Friday and Saturday. Those small local tracks were the beginning of NASCAR. The noise, the smells, the excitement were great, especially for a teenage boy in the era of muscle cars. I was class of 61, Valley Stream Central. Valley Stream Central, Jerry Chermack, Valley Stream Central. Richie Lobel, he was Valley Stream South. The guy who ran CBS all those years. What's his name?
Les Moonves?
Valley Stream Central.
Really?
And thought taking my girl to the stock races was a great thing, and then to Farrell's for ice cream. I don't know Farrell's. I went on from there to attend East Carolina University, meeting up with a bunch of guys from Lynbrook. We introduced lacrosse to North Carolina, deli food, and in return, we learned that chewing tobacco is really bad. Don't swallow it, and 3.2 beer is a killer. And the roots of NASCAR. You might tell Liz that the tracks like North Wilkesboro are coming back to stock car racing, but we could make Lynbrook in the TikTok bar in about 8 hours with a trunk of cigarettes for those 10-cent beers. Just, these emails are so great. From Jason Blazer. Hey, Alex Cobb of Springfield, Missouri. Tell your lifelong friend's daughter to look me up. Maybe I can help her navigate the area, or we can simply chat about local pronunciations. Jason Blazer, either Lake Orion or Lake Orion, Michigan, episode 131. They're now signing their episodes.
Yeah,
from Aaron Lee, Aaron from New Braunfels, Texas, by way of Seguin, not to be confused with Sequin. Oh, Seguin then. Hey, Subaru with the kayak rack on top, with a Chico State license plate frame, California, driving in 135. This is Texas. Get the Tony Kornheiser salute out of the way if you're going to drive 60 on the highway. So we know what's going on. From Aaron Hansen, not to be confused with Aaron Lee, who just wrote that. My lunch on most days consists of peanut butter and strawberry jelly sandwich with an apple and orange, a baggie of Cheetos or Doritos, and occasionally a banana. I have to eat them in this order. PB&J, the banana, the apple, the orange, and then the bag of chips. Yes, Aaron Hansen, Papillon, Nebraska.
That is
yes.
The Hammer's diet.
Yes, that's what you have to do. You cannot mix things. Bill from Cape Coral, Florida. That's some souvenir from Bethpage Black you were sporting on PTI Tuesday. As a kid, I worked at the Yellow Course, the easiest of Bethpage's five. Many years ago, we used long bamboo canes to whip dew off the greens each morning.
Cool.
I never heard of that.
That's wild.
From Todd Berkner in Adamstown, Maryland. For littles that want to try Primanti Brothers without trekking Pittsburgh, the closest one to the DMV is in Hagerstown, Maryland. Make Saliza drive up and bring some back for the show the next time you allow him on. from Elliot Olshansky. Where's the Dartmouth reference? Before reading my last email on the post-Super Bowl show, you said, oh, is it going to be a Dartmouth reference? I'm just guessing. Do you think there's a Dartmouth reference? You then proceeded to read an email that was completely devoid of references to my alma mater, much like 209 of the 244 emails I've sent to the mailbag since 2015. Not only that, but of the 35 that did mention the school in New Hampshire, only 10 of them were read on air, plus the two introducing music from my friend Oliver Kaplan, which were sent to the Jingles email. So that's 12 emails in 8 years, or 1.5 emails per year. But if you really want to paint me as a smug, I suppose I should tell you that I drive a Subaru Legacy and that the woman to whom I'm related by marriage drives an Outback. Recently, she even talked me into buying a used canoe and bringing it home on the roof of said Outback. Mm-hmm. Still, lest you think these actions imperil my status as a loyal little, I can proudly report that when we showed the canoe to our two masculine children, the younger one asked, who's the captain of our boat? And I responded the only way a little should, by telling him to look at me and then informing him, I'm the captain now. Best regards from Suffolk County, where I occasionally visit the Whole Foods and the shopping center that occupies the former site of the Long Island Arena, which I know well, because it was a hockey arena. The Long Island Ducks played there. And one more from Joe Bob Yu in Florida. Longtime listener, first time caller. Thanks for taking my call. As you mentioned, John Martino, a.k.a. Paulie of The Godfather's famous scene, ending in Clemenza uttering the famous line, leave the gun, take the cannoli. I looked up Mr. Martino. It turns out that when everyone is in place, Paulie in the driver's seat, the shooter behind him, and Clemenza outside relieving himself, another guy gets in the back seat on the passenger side with a .22 rifle. John turns around and asks, who are you? And the guy says, I'm here to shoot 3 bullet holes in the front windshield with real bullets to make the scene more realistic. But don't worry, I'm a trained marksman. After calculating his chances of survival, John proceeded with and completed the scene in one take. P.S. Best cooking story. When Lemon Joy dish stuff first came out, I mistook the bottle for olive oil when I cooked my hamburger. While eating it, I thought it was a little bit off, but I ate it anyway. Thank you, Joe Bob. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Want to talk real customers? Kid, that's me. I'm like the mayor of Dunkin'.
I go from Mobblehead to Revere.
Mobblehead.
Baby,
bottom of the ninth with a full count. My mind began to drift. That shortstop down near second base, does that constitute a shift? I was thinking about that and thinking about MeUndies. Did I use the code? Will they be free? And just about then the umpire raised his hand and called strike three. You gotta be alert, you gotta be alert, you gotta be alert to the pitcher. Keep your feet in the box in the dirt, you gotta be alert to the pitcher. When you face Verlander, don't think about your grocery list. When you're in against Kershaw, don't daydream about the first girl you kiss. Don't think about Kyrie Irving for the Beatles-Stones debate. Don't try to figure out why you don't like food touching on your plate. Don't ruminate whether that thing up there might be a spy balloon. Don't wink at the girl in the box seats, there'll be time enough for that real soon. You gotta be alert, you gotta be alert, you gotta be alert to the pitcher. Keep your feet in the box in the dirt, you gotta be alert to the pitcher.